All right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight as we have a new national champion in college basketball. The Hoosiers have a new big man who has committed to the program for this coming fall. And we've got the first major of the year and arguably the most anticipated golf tournament of every year. The Masters is starting tomorrow on CBS and ESPN and wherever else it puts it. So we'll cover all of that tonight and I'm sure just a little bit more. 333-2665 is our phone number. Before we go too far, though, we will recap Monday night as the Wisconsin Badgers representing the Big Ten Conference went up against the Duke Blue Devils, the Badgers having dispatched the Kentucky Wildcats, so we didn't have to worry about any undefeated seasons or anything like that coming down to the championship game, and perhaps more importantly, the Kentucky Wildcats don't win a championship, so kind of a double there. We get to enjoy that in two different ways, but Wisconsin sure looked to me, Glass, on Monday night like they had expounded about every bit of energy they possibly could. And I wouldn't say they look gassed. Certainly, it was a very competitive game against Duke. 68-63 was the final. But unable in the first half to take care of some foul trouble and only getting two fouls called on them themselves. But you get Okafor out of the game. You get Winslow sitting on the bench a bit, each of them with two fouls in the first half. And they just couldn't take advantage. And perhaps more importantly for Wisconsin, while they got some play out of their front court, their back court really was not able to do a whole heck of a lot against Duke. And Duke's back court really ended up being the story of the game, the smaller, quicker back court. But they ended up winning the game for them on Monday night.
Well, the Badgers had to play a pretty tough game on Saturday, and Duke, well, they didn't. Let's be fair on that. Kentucky, a little bit more deeper, stronger, bigger, faster than Michigan State. So kudos to Duke for, A, winning, and, B, winning easily against Michigan State. To the victors go the spoils. And I think when Okafor and Winslow went out of the game, that helped Duke get back into the game because Winslow was making bad decisions. Okafor, again, wasn't the focal point of the offense, but he couldn't guard Kaminsky to save his life. Yeah. So once those guys went out, Wisconsin had to adjust, and Kaminsky had some more difficult time with the more active Plumlee on that. Still got his points, but again, missing free throws, didn't knock down all the shots they wanted to. It was a great half of basketball. It's one of the best halves of basketball I can remember in recent times. So going in tied at halftime, this didn't feel like a game where anybody was going to get out and run ahead 15 points and someone would swing back 15 points. So when Wisconsin was up 9 in the second half, you knew the run was coming. You just didn't think it was going to come from Grayson Allen. And to give Duke credit, remember, I think they played 8 guys in that game, and all 8 of them were McDonald's All-Americans. This wasn't a team of, oh, my gosh, how'd they do it? This right. wasn't some kind of huge upset. Duke was one of the best teams in the ACC all year long. They were a number one seed. So to write this narrative that, wow, how did Duke do it? Well, they got a really good coach. They got some kids that made some big shots, and they did exactly to Wisconsin what Wisconsin did to Kentucky. They made all the shots and the plays down the stretch, and Wisconsin didn't. And fair play to the victors go the spoils. The foul trouble, I think, was, again, helped Duke more than it hurt Duke. Winslow had about 3 or 4 just crazy out-of-control plays that wasn't helping much. I mean, a couple of them went in. I understand that, but you could just tell he was playing like a freshman. But the one freshman that did not play like a freshman, well, the two that didn't really, most outstanding player, Tyus Jones, and obviously the Allen kid off the bench with his own personal 8-0 run when that game was 2 baskets from being who knows where Duke would have been at that point, down 13 or 14 with Wisconsin and how disciplined they play. But again, give Duke credit. They guard. They get after you. They get up in your face, and it shouldn't be easy. And Wisconsin struggled to get points, the most efficient offense since Ken Pom has been keeping track of this since 2002, most efficient offense ever in his ratings, just not this year, struggled. And give Duke credit, all the credit in that. And they made the plays down the stretch. Jones hits a step-back three-pointer. That's exactly what Decker did against Kentucky. 60-60, does the same thing, makes it 63-60. Wisconsin's up 58-56. Jones hits that step-back three. You make shots. You make plays to win those games. It's kind of like the Masters, Dave. You've got to go and birdie to win. You don't go and hope the other guy makes a bunch of bogeys. It's not going to happen. You have to go out, and you have to make plays. Wisconsin, yeah, they'd like to have a couple of those back, but I think you're right. I don't think they had the enough tank in the gas. And once they saw that 9-point lead dissipate, things got a little tight in that. And, again, it didn't work out. It was a heck of a season for them, a heck of a season for Kentucky and Michigan State. But that's number five for Coach K, renaming Indianapolis Krzyzewskiville, 3-0 since since 1991. There are five championships since 1991 for Coach K, 12 Final Fours. If Gino Auriemma didn't win yesterday, to give him 10, boy, oh boy, that's a couple of big-time coaches in the last 48 hours or so, racking up some tournament titles. But you saw some great individual plays. You saw some really good team stuff as well. And it was a final worthy of it. That's why it was the highest rated final in 17 years. It was captivating. Everybody thought, oh, it's got to be Duke and Kentucky. This, no, it doesn't. Not at all, because the kids on the court settled the game, and you saw some future pros out there. How good's Nigel Hayes going to be? Please go pro. Please don't come back to the Big Ten, please. Decker didn't have his best night. Kaminsky did. Kaminsky was the first
Decker
guy.
Decker can go too if he'd like.
Yep, absolutely. Kaminsky had his first player since Carmelo Anthony to double-double both Final Four games. So that's 2003. So do a little math on that. So if you don't like Frank, well, that's up to you.
Hard not to like Frank.
He's awfully, awfully good, and he tore Okafor to smithereens offensively. And, again, putting Jefferson on him late in the game, completely different matchup, and the results were there. They didn't hit the big shots. Duke did, and worthy, deserving champions are the Blue Devils for the fifth time under Coach K. And I don't think they've won any besides the Coach K era, so that's a five all-time.
Don't believe
so. That's, again, great basketball. I don't think you're disappointed except for the Michigan State-Duke game. And in that game, I don't think you could really be disappointed because Duke played so well. They were better. Yeah. They just beat Michigan State. It wasn't bad refereeing
They outclassed them, honestly. They just looked like by far the better team.
Michigan State had one.
After the first 4 minutes.
Michigan State, one McDonald's All-American. Yeah. Duke, eight of them. And, again, talent and Mike Krzyzewski. Whew, you wonder how Duke ever loses. That's why people laugh when they say, how do you get beat by Mercer in the second round, first round? Well, some years those freshmen work out and they don't play like freshmen, and some years they go 2-for-18 or whatever Jabari Parker did last year in that game, and they don't execute, and they did it.
333-2665 is our phone number, and again, to me, the two biggest stretches or the two biggest kind of factors in this are you get Okafor and Winslow in foul trouble. They both have to sit a good portion of the first half. He did put Winslow back in with two fouls for a little while, but sat them both. They both had to come out again in the second half and really weren't able to take a lot of advantage for that. When Okafor and Winslow first went down in the second half, Wisconsin, I think that was the point that Wisconsin had their 7 or 9 point lead. And then, as you mentioned, the other kind of surprising part here is that the exact opposite thing happened when they went out of the game. Grayson Allen came in and gave a huge lift to Duke, and it's almost like he came out of nowhere. This guy has not been much of a factor for them all year long.
He had 16 points in the tournament and 18 points in the championship game.
And this is a kid who's a top 30 talent if you go by those sorts of things. So it's not like he's not he's like a walk-on from Greensboro or something like that. He's a top 30 player nationally as a freshman, but surprising, of course, because he just hasn't done that much this year. But what a lift he gives to Duke. And at a time where, honestly, Duke was kind of scratching their head a bit and starting to complain themselves about the referees, and something you never hear about Duke doing is not getting the calls. It seemed to them, at least, like they weren't getting any calls at that point in time. But Grayson Allen got their head right back in the game and kept them in it. And by the time he put Okafor and Winslow back out there, defensively, at least, they're starting to shut people down.
Well, and the other thing you have to remember is, as much as Okafor and Winslow sat there fresh, Kaminsky's logging 39 minutes, 38 minutes. Decker's logging 37, 38 minutes. Those guys had to play through all that. And those guys, they were in foul trouble. But down the stretch, when the game was on the line, they've got more bounce in their step. They're playing better defense. They're grabbing every
rebound. How about Winslow still managing to get 32 minutes against that front line with the foul trouble that he had? I mean, that means he stayed in there and didn't make some
mistakes. And he got a cookie right in front of Mike Krzyzewski's bench as well. He blows over that guy going to the basket. If Quinn Cook gets knocked over when Kaminsky turns in the post, does Winslow, as a runaway freight train down the lane, that took away three as well. That ball got kicked
out,
and then that went in for three, so you pull that off the board. And then Winslow blasted the guy for number four, but they don't call it. Hey, here's what happened. Wisconsin had two fouls in the first half. They had four at the 15:38 mark of the second half. You want to call it leverage? K's got it, dude. Four rings, USA basketball. He's got the cachet. If you sit courtside at a Duke game, Mike's not the most polite guy when the heat of the battle is going on. And neither's his wife, interestingly enough, if you read about any of that. Mike gets in the referee's ear, and in how basketball is, you play the second half in front of your bench offensively, and boy, oh boy, there goes the parade to the free throw line. There goes fouls left, right, and innocuous plays. The referees didn't decide the outcome of that game. But Wisconsin did not get the rub of the green. Well,
you don't come out of the weekend to talk about how great the referees were. There's no question about that.
No.
But
again,
I'm not sure there was anything that put the balance solidly in one direction. You could argue Kentucky and Wisconsin had issues both directions on Saturday night, too. But either way, you got a great final.
The refereeing's not very good.
Two awfully good teams and a deserving Duke team. I think we all around here would have loved to see Wisconsin and Bo Ryan get his first. But it's hard to argue with Mike Krzyzewski, the best of this generation, and I don't know that it's close at this point in time.
Which generation?
This one that he's in right now.
All of them?
Yeah, and the one before that probably, too. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Got something to read there?
Williams Brother Healthcare Pharmacy is a family-owned business offering personalized expert advice on a wide range of pharmacy services. Find them at 574 Landmark Avenue. Williams Brothers is committed to creating customers for life. Thanks to Williams Brother Pharmacy for being on board with us here in the month of April.
And it is April, so broadcast schedules here and programming notes get a little bit different. In particular, tonight, right after the program, we have the Reds' first broadcast of the year here on WGCL as they are playing the Pittsburgh Pirates in Cincinnati. 7 o'clock for the pregame for that. So happy to have the Reds back on the air. We'll have them again on Friday and Saturday. 7 o'clock pregame on Friday. 1 o'clock in the afternoon pregame on Saturday as they are at St. Louis.
I wouldn't set your watch by tonight's time. I've got the radar in front of me and all that stuff that went through here about an hour and a half ago.
It's
just crossing into Ohio right across from Cincinnati. So it stretches from...
Johnny Bench will have that cleared up by the time.
It stretches from the western part of Cincinnati all the way to 65. That's how big it is. So be patient tonight, Reds and Pirates, game two of the Cincinnati season. Indiana baseball, supposed to start at 6:05 earlier this morning, moved it to 5:05. That storm system came through with the lightning and the tornado warning and everything else. They've just gotten started out at Bart Kaufman. So if you take a look at your radar and deem you want to stop by for a little bit, there's a gap. There sure is. Indiana-Cincinnati. So again, 6:15. Or 6:10 or so was first pitch. So if you want to stop by, gates are open. And college baseball, the Hoosiers looking to get back and start a new winning streak before the Big Ten series on the weekend.
333-2665 is our phone number. Duke is your national champion. Winners over Wisconsin, 68-63, two number one seeds. And oddly enough, three number one seeds in the Final Four, which apparently doesn't happen all that often.
No, really, it does not.
Which is a little surprising. But Wisconsin, of course, took care of Kentucky for everyone in America out there, and especially us Hoosier fans. But a whale of a game on Monday night. Well played. 10 turnovers total in the game. Not great shooting, but some pretty darn good defense. And just some high intensity play, especially in that first half, as you mentioned, a lot more fouls in the second half. But some high intensity play as they went into a tie ball game at halftime. But I mean, Coach Krzyzewski, you mentioned this, since 1991, we're talking 25 years or so here, five championships. In 25 years is simply amazing. And let's give Bo Ryan some credit at Wisconsin, not a pro. I mean, Mike had to build Duke back into something that was relevant again before he even started winning championships. Bo's at Wisconsin, which has never been particularly relevant in our lifetime. So the success that they've both been having.
And
but that was the first time they had been doing much of anything.
Right,
other
teams in the 80s and late 70s.
He's been consistent, and this is one of his only chances to really get this national title.
And you know what?
And loses a lot of players.
He's a little bitter about it, and I don't blame him. And number one, Bo's always bitter. He's either real funny or real upset, and there's not
probably
two ways around it.
Look at the end of the game,
but no, it never is. And again, it's highly emotional. The losing team always goes up first because everybody else is out there cutting the nets down. I get all that. Yeah. I get it. And you know what? Bo's 67 years old. He's coached it. He's won championships at the
might
division.
As well get it out now.
Well, at the Division III level, he's seen the scope of college basketball. Yeah. Coached at University of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or Wisconsin Milwaukee. He's seen all levels of it. So his perspective, I'll listen to because I think he's earned that. Is it sour grapes? Of course. course it is. But he's got a point. A team that's never called for any fouls, weren't for the first 20 minutes, suffered, what, 11 second-half fouls, 12 second-half fouls? 13 and a half?
Yeah.
They had four.
So they had two at the half, didn't they?
Yeah, they had four at the 15:38 mark. They committed their fourth team foul. And to have it swing like that, I could see why. I could see why he's upset. And the other part was college basketball is on a different level right now. I mean, he was asked, because of the way it was seeded and the way it was put together, to beat a team like Kentucky and a team like Duke. And if Wisconsin would have done that, they did not.
And that Arizona game was pretty phenomenal.
That would have been one of the greatest three-game finishes ever, with the amount of talent on the court. And Bo's like, hey, we're not into one-and-done kids. We're not. Well, maybe you need to get into it, because it seems like Calipari every year is making noise, getting deep in the tournament. We've told you Duke's record. They weren't a big one-and-done team to the late 90s, not to the Corey Maggette angle. Right. And remember, that real good Duke team with all that talent, they lost a 99 final to Khalid El-Amin in Connecticut. They were 37-1 and lost that game. They had a bunch of talent that year.
The one they won over Butler actually had a bunch of guys coming back year after year.
They did. That wasn't a Singler, one and done. And that was and guys, you were just looked at it like, who? How are these guys even in the league right now? And again, that was more. That was what was interesting about that, because when Krzyzewski said this was the best one, and every most recent one is the best one. But I'm with you. That team was Singler, and the peskiness of that Duke team was the epitome of the Duke.
Shire on that
team. It was gross. You didn't want to watch it. It was gritty and ugly, and they just made a ton of threes. It seemed to bail them out of every situation. And then he says, this one's the best. All right, yeah. You give me Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, Tyus Jones. Give me those three. Yeah. I'll find six guys at the hyper, and I'm gonna win 20 games.
Those three guys, if you follow this sort of thing, rivals.
If Prince had a love child with himself,
those
three, it would be Tyus Jones.
Those three guys were all ranked in the top 12 by rivals coming into this year. So,
and Bully.
Certainly
him.
Talent helps.
Bully to him. Not everybody can go to Kentucky. Not everybody's into that. And they go to Duke. But I think that's the angle. We can talk about the McDonald's All-American that Indiana's going to get. Duke's got eight more and four more coming this year.
Yeah.
It's nonstop. And if you want to call it basketball factories, great, you can. Duke doesn't have to answer to anybody. They are a private institution. They can let kids take any classes they want, as long as they conform with the NCAA guidelines. You can do anything you want. So if you want to say it's an unlevel playing field, John Calipari, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, who else are the great recruiters that year after year after year get really good players to play at really good programs. So you have to keep winning to stay relevant, and you can have plenty of talent. Calipari had talent at Memphis, didn't win a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
Now all of a sudden he's got talent at Kentucky, winning a lot.
Yeah.
And he was not winning titles. He won one title, and people think that's an abject failure with all the talent he's had.
If you look at certainly the last 10 or 20 years of college basketball, you know, and you can go back farther than that too, but it's not as though there's a whole lot of teams that are getting all the way to these final games and winning these things with marginal talent. There aren't a lot of Villanovas. No. Butler made a name for themselves.
Gordon
because
Hayward's
they were
one of the best shooting guards in the league.
Because they were the Villanova, and they had two NBA players on that team, one of which was a lottery pick. So, I mean, that gets overlooked a little bit. The next year they didn't have
a title. Was last year's Connecticut.
Was UConn team. Exactly right. And that team got hot and won 13 or 14 straight.
Not the UConn team that beat Butler.
No.
The UConn team last year with Shabazz Napier. But still, Shabazz Napier's a rookie in the league playing 28 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
He's not a thing. The one thing I've learned watching this, it's multiple talent. It is no longer. You can't have Kevin Pitsnoggle, Adam Morrison. You can't have that one guy anymore. Manning was, he had some.
It'd be hard.
Milton Newton was pretty good. You had.
You had Carmelo Anthony way back when, but he had three guys on that team other than him that went on to play.
All these guys play.
Exactly.
So if you look at your team and you got one or two good guys, you can kind of pull a Wichita State. You kind of get that hot angle and you go a couple years. If you beat Ohio State and get to a Final Four
together, you know what each other's doing.
Right. And you go undefeated the next year, and then this year you get into a Sweet 16.
No, you got
to
be versatile.
You can do that, but to play in the big dirty sandbox, you got to have big, dirty talent, and that's what it's coming down to. Michigan, Beeline had sick talent a couple years ago. Sick talent. And you know what? They played pretty well together, too. Mitch McGarry was hurt. He didn't play. Or he got hurt the next year, and just all those guys, they couldn't even play with those guys. So it's timing. It's luck. But there's no more Jimmy Chitwood. I'm sorry. It doesn't happen. The 76 Hoosiers are the greatest team in history or one of the greatest teams in history for a reason. It's Scott May, Kent Benson, Quinn Buckner, Bobby Wilkerson. Abernathy's lab, just keep going. I mean, sure, they weren't all NBA All-Stars. It doesn't matter. But they were four-year college guys
What was Buckner drafted? Because Scotty May was a top five guy, wasn't he? And Benson was number one the next year.
And May and Benson were the same year. They both played on.
No, I think Benson had an extra year.
Benson had one more year. That's right. He was a junior. Yeah, but yeah, Buckner, he was first pick for the Pistons. Went out. Sure. And they get drafted. And again, so it's not. It's nice to dream about all that Indiana kids that are going to come off the farm and shoot threes and lead you to the promised land. Duke ain't playing that.
No.
Kentucky, the best players in Kentucky don't even go to Kentucky.
Grayson Allen was ranked just behind James Blackman in the Rivals rankings coming into the season. He had done next to nothing all year long for Duke. He was not a untalented walk-on that walked on the floor and all of a sudden got his chance.
Nope.
He was a very talented player who hadn't gotten or minutes. Earned his chance and took advantage of the minutes he did get as, again, a top 30 national recruit coming in. Hey, folks, you got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. We'll talk about a New York kid coming into the Indiana Farms next fall for the Hoosiers.
Another New York kid.
You're in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Again, we've got rain coming through the Midwest, but we are planning on heading over to the Reds broadcast 7 o'clock right after the show for pregame.
Oh, we will. They just might not be playing.
They might be talking for a while. So.
Well, the good news is they can get you caught up on everything. If you've been into the college basketball, you can get caught up on all things Cincinnati Reds because obviously that system that moved through here that gave us a little rumbling and the tornado sirens going off. Guess where? Well, it's heading that way.
Yep. 333-2665 is our phone number.
Big birthday today.
Yeah.
Larry. That calls IU basketball.
Nice.
Big Larry. So let's say happy birthday to Larry.
And did you say Larry Bird?
No, not Larry. Not that.
Like
not
I was
that
out
Larry.
Of the loop here.
No, Larry.
Well, congratulations, Larry. Bigger.
Well, because that's not Larry's real name, but well, that's all right. But. Happy birthday from all of us here at the ITZ production truck.
Exactly. Very nice. We won't ask how old.
No, we can't.
We don't do that.
He can't hear us anyhow. You get to be that age, can't hear anything. Turn your radio down, Larry.
Looking at this fall and the Indiana Hoosiers looking forward as still have that hole in the middle where that hole in the middle may have been solved at least in part. By the verbal commitment, we stress verbal commitment at this point, of one Thomas Bryant, ranked in the top 30 right now in the Rivals ranking, if that means anything to you.
And moving up, according to everybody.
Hopefully moving up, right? Presumably moving up in some of those rankings. Whatever it is, he's not going to be the number one player overall like Jameel Okafor. But he is going to fill a need for these Hoosiers who need guys inside, particularly, I would say, on the defensive end and on the boards. But it sure would be nice to have somebody on the offensive end you could at least throw the ball into from time to time and bring a little bit of defensive pressure down and away from the shooters. Because at least at this moment, we still have the majority of these shooters that are on this team coming back for next season. So I hesitate to say this is the answer to all the questions for the Hoosiers, but it certainly is the need they have, which is that inside game.
Well, and if you put all the pieces together, if all the pieces stay, and we haven't seen the last or heard the last of that, nobody comes out anymore and says, hey, I'm staying. Well, some people do, then they leave the next week. So I don't even know what to make out of that. All we know is once the deadline passes, there is no change in any of that, but there's been rumblings and rumblings and more rumblings. Troy Williams posting stuff on his Instagram. It shows money and shoes and contracts and pens and things like that. So, again, they're kids. That's what kids do. Some people need attention, want attention, have to have attention. But, again, we'll see what this does because it does fill a very, very large need. What Indiana struggled to do last year, Dave, was, again, the motto, get the ball through the paint. Not staying in the paint, doesn't need to be in there. Just needs to go through there. Then things can happen. But what Indiana didn't do when the ball didn't go through the paint, they had no one to score in the paint. They couldn't just throw it down to Noah Vonleh and have him go, get fouled, make two free throws, whatever it was. Hannah Perea's game isn't ready for that yet, and they didn't have many options that could give them multiple minutes. That you saw flashes of brilliance from freshmen, and you'll get that sometimes, but you don't get a consistent night in and night out effort unless you got guys like Winslow and Okafor and Jones that are really, really, really good. So what I think people need to keep in mind is it's great if you go to a hamburger all-star game. It's great if you're rated by these recruiting training services. But until you go up on a Tuesday night and you got to bang uglies with Nigel Hayes and Frank Kaminsky, mm-hmm. I try to keep things in perspective on that. And it's not fair to the kid. The kid doesn't come out and say, oh, hey, I'm about 12th. I'm not really 30th. Right. You got this all wrong. Right. Let me stand up for myself here. It's not about that. It's about other people that make money off this, making sure their services and their numbers are out there. I get all that. But Indiana fans, don't swallow the hook. If there's one thing we've told you on this program for 10 years, is don't do that. And if you want to, don't get upset about it. If you choose to put all your eggs in a basket, and that basket takes 2 or 3 years to develop, well, that's a you problem. Does it help Indiana? On paper, it sure does, Dave. Has the kid ever done his laundry? Does he have to go to class? He went to prep school last year. He's been away from home.
Well, let's remind people of the first visit to East Lansing for one Mr. Cody Zeller,
sure.
who just got manhandled and disappeared completely
and
from that game.
A lot of guys do that.
It happens, certainly. But, again, this is a team that needed some sort of inside presence. And
would you rather have them or not have them? That's a pretty easy
looking at last year's projections, every projection was, well, if the inside game develops out of this guy or if they get some help out of that guy, and that really never materialized all year long. The best they played all year long was with Colin Hartman, who a lot of people, including me and you, didn't really expect to even see the floor all year long because of coming off his injury. So certainly having a true inside player, it's got to help.
Remember how great everybody thought Hartman played last year? What did he average, 4.3 points a game?
I don't recall.
Well, but that's the point.
Right.
He helped you.
Well, he's in the middle of the year, he took over a different role.
And that's great, and that's what you do when you don't have other guys to fill
exactly
it. And
right.
I think this is
or the guys you need, you thought would be there, aren't living up to their
And this is where you can, again, you have to get better every year. But for the people that say this guy is the piece of the puzzle that has solved it, I'm not going that far.
No, I don't
because
think
what can. Indiana did last year, this kid could come in and block 57 shots a game, and Indiana might be only 11th in the conference in defense, right? So you can't – it's why it's not fair to him. It's not fair to the program. You got all these preseason polls coming out saying, well, this team's going to be this, 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 and this. Again, I'm just telling you to take it all in with a drink of water. Take it all in, and you want to point out and say, well, but last time, Glass, they did that, had us preseason number one, and we were, and we played really well. Well, that's great. And if you want to compare that apple to that orange, you're more than welcome to. I'm telling you,
Look,
should. You have hope? You got hope. Sure do.
It's nice to have a big
sure
body
do.
In the middle on defense. The defense on the perimeter still needs to improve. do you have a closer thing to an eraser now if problems happen? Sure, because that never materialized last year.
When
the defense on the perimeter still needs to improve to limit those
when
chances.
When kids go to Cook Hall and swipe their card in, they do one-on-one full-court drills, right?
They do defensive
positioning. Yeah, slides and play the shell game and do all that. No, they do that during the practice. What they do there is they work on their individual skills to get better. And you saw last year, Dave, basketball is more than a one-dimensional game where you score. Would you rather score than not score? Absolutely right. But how many times do we see down the stretch, the last six games, where this Indiana team did not tie or take the lead in their last six mm-hmm. games except for a Yogi Ferrell three-pointer against Purdue? That was the only time in the final 10 minutes, a quarter of the games, mm-hmm. a quarter of a game, six losses in a row, they didn't tie or lead. So you can talk offense all you want. Did Wisconsin need to score against Duke on Monday night in the last 4 minutes? You bet your rear end they did, but Wisconsin didn't stop anybody either. You didn't get traded stops. You didn't get traded possessions. Duke scored. Wisconsin didn't. What else did Duke do? They stopped Wisconsin from scoring. Why? Because guys can play both ways, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can be one-dimensional. But you can't be one-dimensional against good teams. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen at this level. It could happen. You know what? Wichita State, maybe they are, but they weren't. They were a good defensive team. Could score.
No, they're good both ways.
And you got to be good both ways. If you want to get in the big sandbox with the big boys, you can't be easy to guard or you can't be a pushover on defense.
Got to take another quick break. When we get back, we'll look forward to tomorrow morning as the Masters tease off about 7 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. We'll talk about that in just a couple minutes. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Williams Brother Healthcare Pharmacy is a family-owned business often offering personalized expert advice on a wide range of pharmacy services. Find them at 574 South Landmark Avenue. Williams Brothers, committed to creating customers for life. And a quick update that Bart Kaufman, Bottom of two, Indiana 1, Cincinnati nothing. Kyle Hart, after Tommy John surgery, returning to this, well, a new season here, struck out 5, Dave, of his first 6 batters he's faced tonight. Indiana 1-0 on a Scott Donnelly fielder's choice, scoring Craig Dedalo, so the Hoosiers lead 1-0.
Very nice. We'll have more baseball for you here just after the show as we kick it over to the Reds broadcast, our first of the year, right after the show, 7 o'clock pregame for that. Again, rain going through the area, so we'll see when that actually has the first pitch. We'll have more Reds baseball Friday and Saturday. Friday night, 7 o'clock pregame, and Saturday, 1 p.m. pregame for that. 333-2665 is a phone number. Let's bring in Roy. How you doing, Roy?
Pretty good. Like I tell you, one day hit something before you guys moved on to golf. Besides improving defense, we've got to improve our ball handling efficiency. I was telling you off the air that of the 10 guys that had 200 minutes or more, half of them didn't even have a 1-to-1 ratio for assist to turnovers. And, you know, you maybe expect that out of a 5 that handles the ball a whole lot and scores a lot and doesn't pass out too much. But anybody else needs to be minimum of 1-to-1, and actually your ones and twos need to be at 2 or 3-to-1.
Well, I think it all connects the dots as well, because if you turn the ball over and you give the other team extra possessions and you're not doing a very good job of stopping them in the first place, I think that's why this team struggled, and it struggled against better teams. It might not be the 20 turnovers a game. Sometimes you can only have 13 or 14 turnovers, but if 6 of them are in the last 8 minutes, it's the situational times that when you have a lot of freshmen on the court, Johnson, Blackman, who are going to be handling the ball at those times, that doesn't help. And the other part of that is you got to kind of take the risk-reward with Troy, because he does make some fantastic plays, but he's not rounded off enough to maybe know when to hold him, know when to fold him. And Yogi, I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to mat this out with what I saw all year. When you throw the ball to Yogi with 6 on the shot clock, 35 feet from the basket, he's got to make something happen. Some of those in there, but you're right. In a general sense of giving away possessions, when you have a lot of young kids, and Tom Crean harped on that all the time, you've got to make better decisions. Hopefully, a team a year older next year, Roy, we won't have to talk about half of the guys having not a 1-to-1 turnover ratio.
No, look, yeah. And Yogi was 2.5, almost 3,
yeah,
in that
solid
ratio, as you would like to see.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, look, this team was atrocious with turnovers early in the season. And by the time Big Ten season came along, they started to get better. They still had bad nights, but they started to get better. But what I think you saw sometimes in the Big Ten season is you saw the assists come down because it became too much
dribble,
one-on-one
dribble,
and not enough moving the ball. There were nights where they moved the ball brilliantly and had 18, 20 assists, but that certainly wasn't consistent.
Well, and the other part of that is when you have a big assist number, guess what you're doing? You're making jumpers.
Yeah.
And you're hitting
shots,
layups.
Sure.
Well, when you don't get in the lane, when you're settling for jump shots and they don't go in, those assist numbers drop as well. But I think you're right. High assist numbers are never a bad thing, are they? That means the basketball is moving. That means it's getting shared. And guys are finishing. So Yogi kind of got knocked on a little bit last year for not having a bunch of assists in 2013-14 because he didn't have anybody to make it. The guy was open. He passed it to him. He did his job, but the shot wouldn't go in. So it gets tough on that. But I agree with you, Roy. I think this team has so many areas to improve in. It's irresponsible for some of these national publications to say, hey, now that you got this big 5-star recruit kid, boom, you go right into the top 15. Remember, this team didn't beat any tournament teams its last 9 games of the year. And for that switch to flip and everybody all of a sudden gets better handling the ball, better defensively, better shooting, better that, and that's going to be some heck of a leap from a team standpoint. I understand you got Yogi Ferrell coming back as a senior point guard who's seen everything you can see. That's fantastic. But you've got other kids too. Troy Williams had a great sophomore year. Mm-hmm. Does that mean James Blackman's going to? Does that mean Robert Johnson's going to? What are you going to get from Nick Zeisloff? What are you going to get from Hannah Pereira?
I look forward to seeing what happens. Roy, thanks for the phone
call.
Good job,
Roy.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course you look forward
to it. It is another year and another year of work.
It is.
And
that's if all these guys stay, and that's if the roster remains the same.
And hopefully these are the guys that we hear about that are the hard workers on the team, because, there is work to be had. There's no question about it. It needs to take better care of the ball, and on its best nights on this offense, when it was a thing to behold, it was sharing the ball very well.
It was, and it was making a ton of shots.
333-2665 is
our
phone number.
Good job, Roy.
Thank you. We will move outdoors and down south as we head to Augusta for the Masters, which tees off tomorrow morning. And, of course, the big news heading around here is that Tiger Woods will be playing for the first time in a couple months. Last couple times we saw him, he did not look good and had to withdraw, in fact, with a back injury at Torrey Pines. But back at it, says his game is in good shape or he would not be playing right now. So before we get to the rest of the field, let's talk about the elephant in every room of every tournament, so to speak, and that is Tiger Woods at Augusta. You're heading down on Friday. The snarky comment is, will he still be playing on Friday? But in truth, the question is, can he contend this weekend? Certainly knows the course as well as anyone else, but it comes down to how he's playing.
Well, I mean, he knew the course really well when his glutes didn't fire and had to withdraw that weekend. He couldn't chip and putt on the course where he lived at Isleworth for 15 years. So your guess is as good as mine. I do believe in the fact that he wouldn't play if he wasn't going to be competitive on that. He's not going to go out there and hopefully fall apart. He's too good to do that. You have hiccups. You have bumps in the road in life. You have bumps in the road in your game. He's got like four practice facilities at his own house. It's not like he's going home putting his feet up. Right. But his priorities are different. He's got his kids. His kids caddied for him in the par three today. He's never played the par three since 2004. Do the math. Things are different to him. He's jovial. He's having fun. He's dancing on the greens. What's going on here?
Well, to do that, Augusta.
Nothing else has worked. Why not? Guy hadn't won a major tournament since 2008, right? That's a long time. 7 years. 7 years in his prime.
For a guy with 14, it's a long time.
He didn't win in his prime with
right.
From age 32 to 39, he didn't win a major. Just keep saying that to yourself over and over and over again.
Here's the reason that here's the reason I think he can certainly contend, and that is he knows the course as well as anyone else.
Yeah.
And he still has the game to get you towards the green. The reason he won't contend, in my opinion, first of all, with the way his short game looked recently, I think it's not very far for him to fall back to that with the way it has been recently, because that's been a recent trend of his. The other thing, and this is what scares you in the short term and in the long term, to me, I don't know if his back is hurt. Everybody wants to speculate on whether he's hurt and not, and whether he's coming back too soon, those sorts of things. I don't think he knows yet when his back is quite right or not. He talks about it, but it keeps having a withdrawal here and there and here and there because of the back not firing right. I'm not sure he knows exactly
right.
He wants
it to be good.
He wants it to be good. Of course, we all do. You and I wake up and we want our back
absolutely
to be good. And then
you
twist weird one particular thing. He's trying to put a 130-mile-an-hour golf swing together to hit the hell out of the ball. I'm not sure he knows what that is yet. I mean, he knows what it is on the practice range when it doesn't matter. But when he's out there and the adrenaline's pumping, to hit the hell out of the ball on 13,
shouldn't have to. He should have a shot in his bag where he can get it in the middle of the fairway.
Well, he should, but he hasn't figured it out yet, which is strange.
That's
but
the whole point. This week will be a learning experience for all of us. Will it be the new Tiger Woods, this jovial, happy, new outlook on life guy who plays golf differently, or is it going to be grip it and rip it and hit it all over the shop and not get up and down from
anywhere?
Does
he win?
Until this week, not a chance.
Yeah,
there's no chance he wins
right
this week. If he wins this week, Vegas will be broke.
I just don't think you walk into this course with a short game that's in question and
the
and
only
overwhelm
way,
it with your short
well,
game.
The only way he can do it if he pegs greens in regulation. Yeah. And there's not a lot of rough on that course. It's cut to an inch and 3/8, 1.38 inches or whatever it is. His golf ball is not going to get in too many problems. There's not a lot of out of bounds on that course. 13 and you got to hit it really bad on 4.
Yeah, not many.
10, I mean, look where McIlroy hit the ball and was in play on 10, left mm-hmm. of the left of left.
Yeah.
And so that's not going to bother him. He knows the angles. He knows how to attack there. He knows where to miss it. He knows where to hit it. And to have all that come together after the performances he's shown would be it'd be a Greek mythological tale, is what it would be.
You mentioned the name. There's the other name, the guy who's got the last two majors on his list and already another win this year. He's not maybe in his best form, but Rory McIlroy certainly is one of the favorites heading into this. He's played reasonably well at Augusta. We remember him blowing up in the last round, the last
he's
nine.
He's got three rounds over 75.
A few years ago.
Five rounds over 75 here.
Yeah,
he's blown up once or twice.
But he has played decently also, and certainly, as we mentioned, last two majors, he's got a chance for the Rory McIlroy slam, I guess, if you want to put it that way. But, Rory seems to do well in stretches when he's in his form. Is he in that form right now?
What's his form? If it's tour form or majors form, then that's the million-dollar question. These guys that have won a bunch of times everywhere else, is Rory getting up for the Greater Greensboro Open? Is Rory getting excited to play the Scottish Open? Yeah, because he's preparing to play another tournament after it. No, but he's not. This is what these guys tune their engines to. This is what the guys lift their weights for and get up in the morning and run and jog and do all that stuff. So to see it, the proof's in the pudding. If this is this McIlroy has shown you, he can win two majors by eight shots. That's happened.
Yeah.
The Kiawah Island and the Congressional on two beastly long wet golf courses, he's won. And if it rains at Augusta this week, well, who hits it straighter than he does? Who hits it farther than he does? Who hits irons as well as he does? He does all that great, makes a few putts, Dave. That's how you win by eight shots.
All of his wins are in double-digit under par.
Sure. Win. And the Masters has four par fives, and that's great scoring opportunities, and all of them are reachable in two for him. If he, again, when McIlroy kills people, everybody thinks it's about his putter. It's not. When he just stripes fairway after fairway
puts
after
it at
fairway.
8 feet every time.
All you got to do is make half of those. You don't have to make the two or three greens you hit. If you're hitting every green, you're going to have bad putting numbers because you're not going to make them all.
Jordan Spieth is everyone's flavor of the month right now for damn good reason.
He's
been playing amazing for a year and a half. Can he win?
Absolutely. Why not? He was second here last year, never seen the course before. He's got Ben Crenshaw in his back pocket. I played with him in a practice round again. He obviously learned stuff from him and Carl Jackson over the last 2 years. Jordan Spieth is rewriting the angles of how you play fantasy golf, which I'm involved with on a level where you'd say, hey, you got to play some No, it's kind of like Woods. Yeah. I'm going to go out and play and
set
the course record.
Was he 22?
He'll be 22 in July. July 29th, he'll be 22. And he's won four times worldwide since December.
We thought Rory was the next Tiger. Look out. It might be Rory and Jordan for a while.
Rory does have four majors to speak of, and that's
And Jordan doesn't yet, but
well,
man, I'll tell you what.
On Sunday, Rory can go through that place in his mind and say, hey, you know what? Here's how I closed it out here. Here's how I closed it out there. And that's an advantage. Until you win your first one, you've never won one. Ask Sergio.
So
ask Lee Westwood.
Give us a name other than those two or three.
Jimmy Walker. Watch out for Jimmy Walker. The only thing that people are worried about him this week is that he's playing with Woods the first 2 days, so you never know how that affects a guy. I don't think it's going to bother him a bit. I don't think he's going to care.
I'm going to throw out a name, and this is not brain
super
surgery.
Dark horse, Paul Casey. There's my super dark
horse. How about
horse.
Ricky Fowler? Talk
terrible.
About a guy who's played
so poorly.
Yeah, well,
so
good
poorly.
Time to find it again as he
well,
played
that's
great
what we
all
thought
last year.
When he shot 69-69, then finished the weekend 77-76.
All right, folks. Music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Monday to talk about that Masters champion and whatever else comes up over the weekend. So tune in then. You've been in the zone.